Some of those low-income people faced with difficulty in finding housing are fast food workers. And fast food workers across the U.S. are continuing to demand higher pay. Protests were held in 8 cities this week, including New York, Chicago, and Detroit. And here in Seattle, where fast food workers and their organizers are staging picket lines. They're also charging some fast food restaurants are committing criminal wage theft. David Rolfe is on the board of Working Washington, which is a coalition of labor organizations in Washington State that's supporting this effort. David, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing. Glad to be on.
Fast food workers say wage theft is stealing as much as $100,000 a week from them. And I got a press release from their supporters, the headline suggesting that alleged wage theft arrests may be imminent. Have any managers at fast food restaurants been arrested?
Not to my knowledge, not yet. What the city attorney's office has said is that they are encouraging workers to file police reports, that they'll have the burglary squad investigate those reports, and they are helping unions and community organizations identify what kind of documentation can support a criminal prosecution.
Have there been any charges lodged yet against any of these fast food managers?
Yes. We think there are 6 complaints that have been filed in the last week, ranging from people who were forced to clock out at 1 a.m. but couldn't leave work until 3 a.m., and from folks who never got breaks or who left employment and never got their final paycheck.
But have these reports been held up by the police investigation? Have people been charged with a crime here?
Well, the workers have filed reports of crimes that have been perpetrated against them. And, you know, this is all in the last, I'd say, 5 to 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are waiting to see what the police delivered to the city attorney's office and whether those result in prosecutions.
When do you expect that to happen?
Good question for the city attorney.
All right. How do you measure the success at this stage of the campaign?
Well, I think it's inspiring that workers are having the courage to speak to those in power, to their employers, to the national brands, and to our municipal leaders in this city about not just wage theft, but about low wages. And it took a huge amount of courage for workers to walk off the job and close 14 restaurants for part of the day at the end of May. And we're seeing similar courage around the country. I feel really inspired by it.
What do you want people to do who might sympathize with low wages at fast food restaurants? Stop eating there?
No, we're not at this point telling anyone where they should eat. We'd love to see people at our rally today at Westlake Park at 4:15. And the public is more than welcome to rally with fast food workers demanding a $15 minimum wage and an end to wage theft. We also hope that people will keep these workers in mind as they cast their ballots in the mayor's race and pay attention to the lightning rounds and the questions at forums where candidates are being asked whether that's something they support. And we encourage people to go to the Working Washington website, workingwa.org, and get on our listserv and find out about ongoing actions and petitions and issues as they emerge.
David Rolfe, are there any fast food restaurants that your group thinks are doing a good job with their workers? And I'm thinking in particular of the local chain Dick's Drive-In that I understand secondhand has some pretty good benefits for its workers.
Undoubtedly, it sets the standard in Seattle, undoubtedly. Now, that standard still isn't good enough,
mm-hmm.
but clearly Dick's is a beloved local institution that does better than just about anyone else in this industry.
One issue that must be facing you in organizing fast food workers is the huge turnover. By one account, I saw 75% a year. How do you keep the heat on when the people are coming and going so quickly from these jobs?
Well, they're coming and going from the jobs with a specific franchise, but a lot of them are staying in the industry for quite a long time. You know, I think people have this perception that somehow this is suburban teenagers saving up for a movie and a soda on the weekend. Actually, 25% of fast food workers are over the age of 40. 2/3 of women fast food workers have children, and 75% are adults. So you see people maybe not be able to stay in one specific job or may not be able to get enough hours there, so they switch to a different restaurant. But there are people who are long-term fast food workers.
David Rolfe, thanks for talking to us today.
You bet.
David Rolfe on the board of Working Washington. It's a coalition of labor organizations in Washington State working on the issue of wages and working conditions for fast food workers. And Good Job Seattle, the group that's organizing this, has a rally at Westlake today at about 4:15 this afternoon. Stephen Greenhouse is a labor and workplace reporter at the New York Times, and he's been following these strikes. He has a piece analyzing them in today's paper. Stephen, thank you for your time.
Nice to be here.
So the main tool of the fast food workers has been the one-day strike. Why is that the tool they are using?
Well, these workers don't make a lot of money. And, typical strikes are, can last indefinitely. They can last 2 weeks. They can last 2 months. And these workers can't afford to, say we're going to go out on strike indefinitely 2 weeks, a month, to pressure their employer to recognize them as a union. They're just trying to get the message across. They're trying to tell their employers. They're trying to tell the cities of Seattle, Chicago, New York, Washington, that they're fed up with low wages. They think this is unfair. So they're trying mainly to win public attention. And the second thing, and as Mr. Ruffles was saying, they're trying to show that they're not scared to stand up. And in willing to go on strike for a day, they're trying to show coworkers at their restaurants and dozens of other fast food restaurants in Seattle and other cities that you too should be willing to step up, speak out. Don't worry if you miss a day of work. It's not going to hurt you. They're not going to fire you for it. So, one-day strike, it's a very good way for them to get their point across. They go back to work the next day. They show their coworkers they've had courage to do this. They talk to their coworkers to try to spread the cause. It's much less painful than a two-week or two-month strike.
But at the same time, the goal of a strike is to put financial pressure on the employer to get them to come around. A one-day strike doesn't seem like it's enough to do that.
Well, I don't think yet that they're trying to apply financial pressure. I think they're trying to get the message across, to the news media, to their coworkers, to politicians, and they're trying to use kind of moral suasion. They're trying to embarrass their employers to saying making $725 an hour, $8 an hour, in many other cities. I know in Washington State, the minimum wage is higher, but they're saying this is enough. They say they want $15 an hour. Some people say, $15 an hour is a bridge too far. They're asking too much. It would be much more reasonable to ask for $10 or $11 an hour. But to really, it's hard. There's not one of the more than 200,000 fast food restaurants in the nation is unionized. So for workers at 5 or 10 or 15 fast food restaurants in Seattle or Detroit or Chicago or New York to say, we're going to go on strike for 2 weeks or 2 months, how are they going to support themselves? How are they going to pay the rent? How are they going to support their families? These aren't like auto workers or Boeing workers who've been able to save up, thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars so they could weather a strike. These are like 23-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, many of them with kids, who just can't afford a real strike. So this is an alternative strategy. There's a little bit of Occupy Wall Street in it. They're making a lot of noise. They're, really reaching out heavily to other young people. And I think, we've really seen in the past few weeks that this whole effort has been gathering steam. It's been getting a lot of attention. I think it's really starting to affect the national conversation in ways like Occupy Wall Street in getting many, many people to focus on, is there too much inequality? Are wages too low for those on the bottom?
Attention is being paid, but is there any suggestion that these large companies that run the fast food restaurants are going to do anything to respond to it?
That's a good question, and that's unclear. I think, when I speak to some of the people, some of the strategists, they say this is not a two-month effort. This is a long effort, like the Justice for Janitors effort, where the Service Employees Union organized thousands, even tens of thousands of janitors across the country. It was like a 10-year effort that began slowly and built and built and built. So I think in the first stages, they've put pressure on the employers. They've given a lot of employers the black eye. I'm sure McDonald's doesn't like to hear that, you have all these workers who are being paid poverty wages. You can certainly afford to pay more. We just heard David Rolf talk about that a lot of fast food restaurants in Seattle are being accused of wage theft and not paying a lot of workers the wages due them. This is all embarrassing, the fast food industry, and then they're going to continue to ratchet up the pressure, by bringing wage theft lawsuits, by demonstrating, to try to maybe get the fast food companies to step up and pay more.
You know, organizing workers kind of requires that they be in the workplace. And when I asked David Rolfe about the reported 75% a year turnover into the fast food business, he said, no, they stay in the industry, so they'll still be able to be part of these organized efforts to embarrass the fast food companies. What do you think about that? What are you hearing from labor historians?
I guess I see that a little differently. You know, there is a huge amount of turnover because, you know, these people, a lot of these people, you know, in states other than Washington State, you know, just make $7.25, $7.50, $8. And we interviewed all these strikers in Detroit yesterday. Many of them are making just $7.40 an hour, and it ain't easy living on $7.40 an hour by yourself. And we interviewed several workers with 2, 3, 4 kids, and they're making only $7.40 an hour. So a lot of them look for jobs elsewhere that pay more, but it's hard. You know, many of them are workers in inner cities where the unemployment rate is high. They probably didn't go to great schools. It's hard for them to go to college. And so they're kind of relegated to jobs that pay less than $10. So some might move to construction or security guard or nursing home aide. So there is high turnover, you're right. But anyway, as a professor I quote in today's story, said, look, yes, there's high turnover. Yes, they're making very little money. And they have nothing to lose by supporting a union. I think, again, at you know, higher paid workers are often worried that if they stick their necks out to try to support a union, their employer might retaliate against them, demote them, fire them, and they say, I have too much to lose. But I think a lot of these fast food workers think, I'm only making $7.25 an hour, I'm only making $8 an hour, what do I have to lose by trying to form a union? We might be able to unionize our restaurant, we might be able to get wages increased to $10, we might win paid sick days. So I think a lot of the workers might be willing to support a union, even with a lot of the turnover.
Stephen Greenhouse, I noticed in today's article in the New York Times, you talked to a lot of different labor historians. What do they think the chances are of this type of campaign working?
So I quote two different labor experts in my piece. One, Nelson Lichtenstein at the University of California, Santa Barbara, says, you know, there are no unionized fast food restaurants in the country. This ain't easy. He said the fact is a lot of employee turnover might mean that the employees are not invested and won't care and aren't going to stick their necks out. And also, he said, you know, this might peter out after 6 months or a year, although, you know, this movement started 8 months ago, and it certainly hasn't petered out. And he also said, don't forget, employers are very sophisticated in mounting concerted drives to try to persuade their workers not to unionize. Then I spoke to another professor, Dorian Warren at Columbia University, who said, you know, most of these fast food workers are African Americans or Latinos. And if you look at, you know, what demographic groups are most supportive of unions, of unionizing in the United States, it's African Americans and Latinos. And he said he thinks there's a good chance these workers would vote to unionize because, again, you know, their demographic groups are predisposed in favor of unions, and also they're making very little, and they have very little to lose by voting to form a union.
Stephen Greenhouse, thanks for giving us the big picture here.
Sure enough, my pleasure.
Stephen Greenhouse is the labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times. We have a link to his story today about the fast food worker job actions around the country. You'll find it at KUOW.org. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.